Oh, that was nice. Hi, welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News. I'm Alice Stewart. Give me a face, Dan. A little.
I was
super
just,
freak.
I was a little thrown by that. Yeah,
I liked it. I liked it.
I liked it too.
Jay-Z. And all of his fine musical work featured here on the Bryant Park Project. Alison Stewart, Dan, the Danimal Pashman in the studio. I'm Luke Burbank. You know, Dan, on my last day, I think you would be able to write some amazingly hilarious intro for the most, as you have been doing over the last week. But right. Really kind of just punted on this one.
I didn't write this one.
Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks for caring and for sharing. It's time for the most emailed, viewed, and commented stories on the web. We call it the most.
All right, I'm going to go first because I'm sort of fascinated with this new most offering from CNN.com. You know, they have most viewed and most commented. They have most watched, which are their most watched clips. And the number one most watched clip this morning was, here's the title, Jodie Foster Thanks Gay Partner.
Mm.
It has been written about quite a bit that at an award ceremony for women in entertainment, the Power 100 Breakfast in Los Angeles, Jodie Foster received an award. She walked up to the podium, and I guess people want to know exactly what she said. So here's the clip that everybody's watching on CNN.
I'm not sure I've managed to deserve the family of friends that surrounds me. My agent, Joe Funicello, my publicist, Pat Kingsley and Jennifer Allen, my lawyer, Matt Saver, my mother, Evelyn, who dreamt it all, my beautiful Sydney, who sticks with me through the rotten and the bliss.
My beautiful Sydney is the reference. Jodie Foster has been quite notorious not the right word. She has just been very guarded about her private life, about her children. The only person she really talks about in her life is her mom when she talks about family. And she's always been about work, 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 work. So the piece went on to have two CNN international hosts just jabbering on about what this actually all meant. But people are checking it out because they want to hear it for themselves.
Sydney, wherever you are, props to you.
Mm.
Whatever you are. Mm-hmm. Dan Pashman, what do you have for
us? Hey, guys, how are you? We got a most emailed here from the Christian Science Monitor. This is based on a study. The study itself actually came out last month, but this coverage of it, this article, is new. Babies apparently gravitate toward Good Samaritans.
How do they know?
Well, Corbett, that's a great question.
Babies know the good in the world.
I believe the children are the future.
Don't even start.
Easy,
just
Trebek.
Stop it.
Yeah, I mean, apparently, the argument.
There. Sorry, Dan.
Yeah, then. The argument, Corbett, is that there's some sort of innate ability that's been bred by evolution, because the idea is that people benefit from knowing others who are going to help them out in their lives. But the experiment they did was with 6 and 10 month old babies. They showed them a circle struggling to get up the top of a hill, and it couldn't get it. Looked like it was not going to make it. And all of a sudden, a triangle, Mr. Triangle, comes bouncing along and pushes the circle up to the top of the hill, and the circle bounces up and down in celebration. Separately, they show a circle going up the hill, and it can't make it, can't make it. Then all of a sudden, a square comes down from the top and crushes the circle and shoves him down the mountain. Then they gave the kid a choice. What toy would you like to play with, kid? The triangle or the square? And kids invariably chose the helper toy as opposed to the hinderer. And they tried switching the shapes around, different colors, the whole nine yards. And kids overwhelmingly chose the helper shape instead of the hinderer shape.
This sounds like something between apple-shaped people and pear-shaped people, like the size of your hips or something like that.
I think it just means that kids know it's not good to get squished.
Yeah. Hey, have you ever tried to be a square going up a hill? It's hard.
Hey, Director Jacob, could you put the clock up for us so we don't talk too long? Thank you. Hey, Corver, you're next.
I do. I've got one from the Ontario Star. If you want to do something to punish your kid, well, you don't have to put coal in their stocking. Take away their Wii games. Here's a guy in Canada who got so mad at his son for smoking pot in the backyard, he took away his Guitar Hero 3 game. And apparently not only that, he put it up for auction on eBay. That'll teach him. Anyway, the highest bid, $9,000. It got picked up by a guy in Australia. And there's another website called PressPlay.com that says, if you want to help ruin this kid's holiday spirit even more, bid here. I'll do it for you.
Oh, that is harsh. Hey, Tricia, can you do it quickly?
Yeah, I can. This is one of the most emailed on MSNBC.com. It's kind of a downer. It's about the collateral damage from the mortgage crisis. It's just a story about you know, not just people who are having their homes foreclosed on and having to deal with all of that, but other people that you might not have thought of at first, like renters. Apparently 20% of foreclosures involve investment properties. So when a landlord goes into foreclosure, what happens to the tenants? They end up on the street. These are people who mostly paid their rent on time. You know, they don't have any issues, but suddenly they find themselves, you know, with no recourse. And maybe now they're, you know, some people quoted in this article say, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, if you find out I was evicted, even if I was a good tenant, you won't believe me, and I'm not going to get another apartment. So that's causing some issues for them. Congress is considering a measure to require landlords to give tenants 90 days notice, but that may not be in time to help.
Yeah, and if you're a landlord who's not paying the mortgage anyway, you're probably not Johnny on the organized going to let the, you know, poor tenant that you're about to lose the place.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, and apparently this is putting stress on homeless shelters because some of these people who are evicted are going to homeless shelters. I mean, it's just the ripple effect is incredible.
Wow. And our last most of the day comes from senior producer Matt Martinez.
Hello, I have the most emailed story at NPR Music right now, and it's also the number three most emailed at NPR.org. It's by Stephen Thompson, an NPR producer, who decided to listen to a quite eclectic bunch of Christmas music from his journey from D.C. to Wisconsin. It's a 1,000-mile road trip, and he aired this essay on Morning Edition, and it's shooting to the top. And here it is for y'all to enjoy.
I've always enjoyed hearing new Christmas music, but there's just so much of it. Every fall, I receive dozens of new holiday CDs, countless hours of music to sift through in the long, agonizing build-up to Christmas. This year, I decided to save them all for one epic binge during a long road trip to see family, to be captivated by the holiday spirit while held literally captive. Pulling out of the driveway, I started, as one does, with A Swingin' Christmas by Michael Bolton.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening.
Thus began 18 of the longest hours of my life. Michael Bolton's Swingin' Christmas was my ploddin' Christmas, a tensely endured soundtrack for a holiday hell ride through D.C. traffic. Still, I would get through 21 CDs before the journey's end. Some actually evoked the joy of the season. The Staple Singers made a glorious gospel record back in 1962. Now on CD, after years out of print, it exudes grace and reverence.
Tell me when was my Jesus born?
Last month of the year.
Well, when was Jesus born?
Last month of the year.
That wasn't the only treat. Over the Rhine and Mindy Smith each played songs of gentle beauty. Rock bands Reliant K and Sister Hazel tried out new songs that were sincere, lighthearted, or both. But at times, my voyage seemed like an exercise in punishing gonzo journalism. In my worst moments, I felt like Hunter S. Thompson in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, but with Josh Groban songs instead of mescaline. Someone had sent me a new version of A Twistmas Story, a 1983 album on which the late country singer Conway Twitty performs holiday favorites alongside a character called Twitty Ball.
What's he doing, Conway?
Well, he's making sure the old Snow Witch doesn't steal any of the presents Santa has for everyone.
I'm sure glad he has Snowball to watch out for everything. Hey, it's starting to snow again.
900 miles into my trip, I may have hallucinated this album into existence. But suddenly, during its final track, I found myself loving the oddball sincerity of A Twistmas Story. Just then, as Conway Twitty told Twitty Bird the story of Jesus' birth, a gentle snowfall graced the skies over Manitowoc, Wisconsin.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright, round yon verge.
You didn't dream it, Stephen. Conway Twitty is real. So real. Stephen Thompson, he's put up samples of all that music he listened to on his drive to Wisconsin, and you can enjoy it for yourself at npr.org/music, and that does it for the most.